This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hey, happy Boxing Day, everyone. Hope you had a wonderful Christmas too. My name is Audrey Raj, and you are listening to a very special year-end episode of Enterprise. It is the last week of the year, and as we look back on 2018 and reflect on the year that was, we've picked out two of our favorite shows that aired this year, what we call the Enterprise Bob, the best of the best in 2018. To kick things off, here's Arvind's Merdeka special entitled The Business of Building Future Malaysia. Take it away, Arv.
One of the biggest issues was this. The education system we felt was just too old. It wasn't meeting the needs of the real world and the industries. So we actually went forward into the future and kind of reverse engineered the whole process.
Okay.
We went we looked into after the students graduate and 20 years later, what are the skills they needed? Then we went backwards. What do they need tertiary? That's when we started working at from the year 11 backwards down to year 1.
This year, we are all about a new government, new opportunities, and the ongoing effort of building the future of Malaysia. But what exactly does that mean, and where do we start? Well, the youth of Malaysia are the future of Malaysia, so education would be a good place to start. Now, trying to decide if our education system is good or bad could take all years, so for better or worse, it is what it is. It provides the access to education to the masses, to those who can afford it and to those who cannot. But because of its all-encompassing nature, by definition, the system cannot cater to the individual student. This is where third-party educators can step in. Businesses, startups, entrepreneurs, they can all play a proactive role in effectively developing the future of Malaysia by helping to educate students, young adults, and even older age brackets on a more micro level.
The thing is that this is one of the things that we realize. You have to have the heart for it. And the other thing is the determination to also do something about the education system.
This is Anne Tham, founder and CEO of ACE Adventure. Anne is also the person behind Sirius Education, the Sri Emas and Dwi Emas International Schools, and a very popular educational video game called Chem Caper. She's joined here by her sister, Melinda Lim, for an interview with Majida Hashim on the subject of unique education and the role of an education reformist.
So we went in that direction. We wanted to make sure that the kids love it. They are learning way more than they would ever learn in general, like maybe back in school and stuff like that. So then we said, look, the kids are capable of so much more, but most schools are not giving them that kind of challenge to actually raise their levels. I'm talking about not the knowledge, but skill level. You know, the fact that they can speak up, the fact that they can think. So we gave them lots of opportunities to do that, to be creative. And that's how the whole thing started. And then we realized, look, we can do this across all subjects.
Yeah. And I think throughout, the focus has always been about the students. I mean, when we realize that when we can communicate and the students are getting it, that's where that's what pushed us along and kept us going.
Yeah. The other thing is this, because a lot of times the learning styles is kind of focused on strong students. The rote learning style of education, it's actually only suitable for a small percentage of students. The rest of them, they don't like it, so they don't get engaged. So we decided, look, that's this whole bunch of students that we have to help make successful, right? And so we did that. We figured ways just to get them interested. So we ended up with a curriculum where we can do very creative activities in like physics and chemistry and math and ad math, econs even, history and geography. So these are very, very heavy factual based subjects. And yet we can get them to create and sing, and they go to the water theme park to do ad math experiments. So our year one, year two students, they're learning things like through Mortensen math that we use. Yeah, they learn algebra, calculus, distance, area, and volume in year one, year two itself.
Okay, wow. Okay. Mm. Were they able to handle these kind of things?
Yes, because actually we look for similarities.
Mm-hmm.
What the education system has done is that they look at, oh, algebra, too difficult, so you don't teach little children. But if you know multiplication table, you can teach algebra. So when the students get to that level, they already know how to do factorization, imagine, at year two. You have to understand, people talk about the 21st century skills, right? What it actually means to educationists is that whatever we teach is no longer just theory. You have to be able to apply.
Mm.
Now, the issue with educationists also is application means apply in work, academic projects and coursework or whatever. But for us, the application is to apply it to the real world.
Mm.
You know, and that's how the whole, we felt, 21st century education was about. Now, how do you get a teacher who's trained to teach physics to actually know how to apply it in the real world? We decided, look, we wanted engineers. You know, engineers know how to apply physics into the real world,
mm.
how to apply math into the real world. In fact, we had a conversation with one of the universities, you know, for education recently. They asked us, what is it the international schools are looking for? You know, so that they can produce the teachers for the schools. I said, please get me people who are trained to use the subjects for real rather than trained to teach the subject.
Mm.
Big difference.
Anne's approach to education leans towards the skills that her students can apply to their careers and just life in general once they graduate or leave school. It's a very cool concept and maybe something that even mainstream schools, government schools can look into implementing more into the current curriculum. One of the skills that Anne highlights in this interview with Frida Liu is entrepreneurship. Malaysia is going through a startup boom as we speak. Lots of people are launching their own companies in an attempt to create their own career instead of depending on someone else to realize it for them. And as an entrepreneur herself, Anne Tham's method of education seems to be bolstering the Malaysian startup culture while empowering students as young as 7 to learn the art of doing business.
But what we did with Duya Mas was we have now have a platform to take it further. It is the first entrepreneurial school in the country.
Mm.
And it's not, you know, just a say sort of thing, yeah?
Mm.
Where people may have a CCA, you know, to run enterprise or entrepreneurship. We created a curriculum together with entrepreneurs.
Right.
In order for every one of our students to be exposed to entrepreneurship and financial education.
This is from year one?
From year one. As young as like, when they join us, some of them are 5, some of them are 6 years old. So they're really cute the way they are responding to, you know, finance and stuff. Yeah. Now they're at, some of them at year two are advising their parents. Teaching has allowed me to connect with young people. And I realized that their minds are a lot more open. So, you know, if you want to make a difference or make an impact in people's lives, it helps when their minds are really open to what the possibilities are. And what I found was that too many students didn't have the skills that is really highly in demand in college, like the ability to speak up, the ability to think. And you have to write academic papers. But a lot of people think that in order to do academic writing, you have to do a lot of factual writing. But no, what I found is you really need to be able to be creative and write creatively in order to manage the factual information. So I decided actually at that moment that, look, I think we've got to start this from young because we can't have 11 years of education and the majority of students coming out not having these skills.
Generation Z. Tonight, we are young. That as everyone born after the year 1995 is slowly starting to enter the workforce. They are the teenagers, the school students, the influencers, and they're also digital natives, meaning they were born in a world that already ran on the internet, smartphones, and social media. Traditional methods of teaching, like textbooks, for instance, are now in competition with handheld gadgets and 5-inch screens that these students own. And as an entrepreneur slash educator, Ann Tham's solution to this isn't to fight technology, but to embrace it. This is where ChemCaper comes in. It's a role-playing, adventure-centric video game that helps players learn chemistry by solving puzzles and advancing to the next level, with each new level presenting a harder quest and even more chemistry-centric questions.
Yeah, because, you see, we have been pushing the boundaries of how education is done, right? Mm. People talk about the fact that, okay, you look at what works, you know, and then maybe think out of the box. What we did was, when we started our whole education system, we threw away the box. Mm. We didn't even have a box. We just looked at, okay, the students need this. So how are we going to get them there?
Mm.
Okay. So for chemistry, it came about because we know that most countries are struggling with getting their young people, particularly students, to get excited about science, the sciences and the math.
Mm.
Not just our country alone. So people are talking about the STEM initiative all over the world,
yes.
You know, for science, technology, engineering and math.
Mm.
Yeah. So we decided, why not focus on subjects that around the world people are struggling with?
Yeah.
But then we chose chemistry. Then we found out, we were advised to take chemistry because it's actually one of the hardest subjects to actually teach and learn, you know.
Yeah.
So we decided to take the bull by the horns and go with it. And we just kept getting feedback from people around the world that they were very excited about the game because it's the first chemistry role-playing game in the world. When you look at the textbook and then when you translate it into a game, you know, the levels will be completely different. And that's what we're trying to do here.
That was a taste of our Merdeka special on the business of building future Malaysia, produced by our very own Arvind Yuvaraj. For the full version, go look for the podcast on our website, bfm.my, the BFM app, available now on the Apple App Store and on Google Play, or you can even find us on Spotify. All right, we're taking a quick break for some messages now, but when we come back, another enterprise bop, this time on what we Malaysians love best. Food. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Banana from Malaysia. BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is the Enterprise Year-End Special with me, Audrey Raj. We are playing you our picks of the best Enterprise shows in 2018. And let me warn you that this next one is gonna have you salivating. Here's Christine Wong with her Malaysia Day special called Home is Where the Flavor Is.
What is your favourite Malaysian food and why?
Banana leaf. You can get it with fried chicken, fried fish, mutton, pretty much anything, and there's the variety in gravy. And yeah, it's a very rich dish, I guess, but it's always satisfying.
My favorite food is nasi lemak. And the reason being, I think the risk of being disappointed is severely lowered. It's very hard to go wrong with nasi lemak, so I don't like to be disappointed, so nasi lemak for me.
Favorite Malaysian food is petai sambal, because it reminds me of home, and it's spicy, and it stinks just the right amount.
I really like kwetiau goreng because of how it's just hot and steamy as soon as it comes, and it's just really nice for me.
It's definitely char siu rice. Actually, char siu siu rice with a bit of chicken on the side. I don't know, it's very wholesome, I guess. It's just really delicious. That's all I can really say about char siu siu rice and chicken.
This is Enterprise. I'm Christine Wong, and this is a special show in honour of Malaysia Day 2018. Now, it's fair to say that Malaysian food appreciation is ingrained into any Malaysian from birth. Our cuisine and our flavours is something that we are all united on and consistently proud of. Today, on this Malaysia Day special, we'll be looking at three enterprises working with local flavours in totally different ways. We begin, of course, with the place Malaysian cuisine was born, the street. Full disclosure before we continue, there are many Malaysian street foods that we pride ourselves on. nasi lemak, char kway teow, rojak, a whole assortment of various kuehs. The list goes on. However, I decided to focus on a street food that, due to its processed nature, I feel should be available worldwide, but also somehow isn't. We begin our culinary adventure today with the humble Ramly Burger. The Ramly Burger has had a long history here in Malaysia, having been introduced to us in 1979 by Datuk Haji Ramly Mokni. What is so impressive about the Ramly Burger is that while we now associate it with being part of a brand, Mr. Mokni started out by selling burgers with his wife from street food stalls. His entrepreneurial instinct kicked in when he wanted to provide a halal certified meat source, and so the Ramly Group was officially founded in 1984. I managed to talk to a very obliging Ramly Burger proprietor about why he does what he does, and he seemed to share the same simple appreciation for this classic late night indulgence that his customers do. First of all, what is your name?
Alright. Okay, my name is Nasrun.
And are you Malaysian?
Of course, yes, I'm a Malaysian.
What got you started making Ramly Burgers?
Actually, what got me into doing Ramly Burgers is because I love burgers and I believe that mostly Malaysians also love burgers. That's why I'm interested in doing this.
I see. And how long have you been doing this?
I started selling burgers since I was 20. So it's like about 10 years. 10 years from now lah. Because now I'm 30 years old.
And how do you feel about that? Do you enjoy it?
Of course, I did and enjoy. I'm still enjoying selling burgers because it's my passion. I don't know. I just enjoy it all the time. So I enjoy selling burgers all the time because I met a lot of people, a lot of, you know.
What are your working hours like? From what time to what time?
Mostly night lah. Because at day, I got something else to do. About 8 p.m. Till it depends. If I think is almost done, then I stop.
Okay. What other thing do you do during the day?
Actually, I'm as a cook at Mamat Stall.
So your whole life revolves around food? That's kind of amazing. What is your personal favorite burger? Like, if you were to order one, what would you order?
I mean, other than the burger itself, people prefer special. Of course, special with the eggs and the eggs.
Apart from Ramly Burgers, what is your favorite Malaysian food?
I like and I love nasi Arab, like chicken mendi, lamb mendi, and that's all my... I mean, that's one of my favorite food.
Why do you think people like Ramly Burgers?
Ramly Burger? I don't know, it's just that our Malaysian loves burgers. Since, I don't know, since when, but they love burgers.
So, do you consider Ramly Burgers a purely Malaysian food that you can't find anywhere else?
Obviously, because Ramly itself is the name from Malaysian, right? Ramly, right? So, I don't think Ramly is from Thailand or what.
Now, here at BFM, we've addressed our love of Ramly Burgers before. Here are a few BFMers sharing their opinion of the Ramly Burger experience.
The ideal Ramly Burger,
it's got to be the double one, everything on it.
It has to be with egg.
Tambah bawang, please.
I think it's just got to be a special.
Egg and cheeseburgers.
Sometimes they even have pineapple in there.
Oh, delicious. I still think, and I know it sounds like I'm a cheap date, but this one time when I took a date for a Ramly Burger, it was so unexpected. Most people expect a fancy dinner. But let me tell you, duduk kat tepi jalan, have a Ramly Burger with a Milo ice, just seals the deal every time.
With my dad, he's not much of a great cook. So he tries his best to like compensate that by saying, oh, I can cook burger for you. And it's usually Ramly Burger.
Ramly Burger, Maggi Mee, you know, these are the things that, you know, we grew up on.
My first memory of a Ramly Burger is probably at Stadium Merdeka, those soggy,
that stink that kind of wafts across,
somewhat tasteless burgers, but it was an essential part of the experience of being at a football stadium and having dinner.
Because you can put your timun and you can put your bawang on it, you know, it feels like home cooked.
It used to be seen as like this
structure of meat between bread is definitely a
Western dish, but now
the Burger Labs and the Kilogami Burgers and the
KGB all came about, like these new burger places started popping up.
I think it started from Ramly Burger.
It's pretty much as common as it you'd see anywhere else.
I think it's got this earthiness, this localness to it, right?
Western or Malaysian, I don't think that matters. Food is what unites us all, you know?
Interestingly, one fun fact about the Ramly burger is that it will never make its way to Singapore, where the patties are actually banned due to the meat coming from sources which are not on the Agri-Food and Veterinary Authority of Singapore's approved list of commercial food imports for meats. But even though the Ramly burger hasn't quite achieved worldwide fame yet, it did make quite the splash in late 2017, where it was sold in New York by a team called the Malaysian Project at the Queen's Night Market for a whopping $12, roughly around 51 ringgit, which is incredible for a Ramly burger. There it is known as the Malaysian style burger and has slightly different seasonings, but it's clear that the Ramly burger appeal is totally universal. After all, what's not to like?
To listen to the full interview, which also features Christopher DeMello from Mum's Place, that hidden gem in Damansara Perdana, which serves Malay, Portuguese, Chinese, and a smattering of Nyonya and Indian dishes, go look for the podcast titled Home is Where the Flavor Is. Now, before we go, let me just speak for the team by saying thank you so much for being with us on Enterprise this year. We've got some new tricks up our sleeve for 2019. And to give you a glimpse of what's in store on Enterprise next year, here's the commander of the Starfleet, Jeff Sandu. Over to you, Captain.
Thank you, Audrey. If I am Jean-Luc Picard, then you're definitely Deanna Troi, the ship's counselor aboard the USS Enterprise D and the USS Enterprise E. But you know what? Let's not get too carried away with our Star Trek references. So throughout this year, you might have noticed that our 10 a.m. slot is just called Enterprise. Next year, we're bringing back something a lot more familiar that is called Open for Business. After taking a bit of a break, Open for Business, or OFB in short is what we call it here in the station, is coming back. And on every Mondays at 10 a.m, we will have a business coach or an expert in a particular industry to help you navigate the complex space of entrepreneurship through advices and also learnings. And on Tuesdays to Fridays at 10 a.m, we will be featuring entrepreneurs that have opened up their businesses for at least the past 6 months and share their journey and challenges that they have faced. If you are an entrepreneur in any industry, it doesn't matter if you're selling a product on Instagram or in a mall, if you're a B2C or a B2B business, from 3 employees to 300 employees, disruptor or innovator, as long as you have been in business for the past 6 months, get in touch with us. We want to hear from you and we want to help you share your story. All you have to do is simply email us at enterprise@bfm.my and tell us why. Why did you start your journey? How did it all begin? How has it been so far? And also, what is your dream? Again, our email is enterprise@bfm.my. Back to you, Deanna, Audrey, Raj, Troy.
That is a pretty freaky name, but thanks, Jeff. And with that, it is time for me to beam out of here. My name is Audrey Raj, and remember, if you missed out on any part of this show, you can find the podcast on BFM.my, the BFM app, and also on Spotify. Thank you for listening, and see you next year. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.